I'm Fathery.
I'm Sohail.
I'm Miss Taylor.
And this is Text Trek.
Engage.
Welcome back aboard the Starship Texas for the 357th installment of the Text Trek podcast, the home of Star Trek fandom from deep in the heart of Texas, where we take a deep look at Star Trek, old and new. And tonight, we are talking about Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, and asking ourselves, what is different in this movie now that we've listened to the Khan audio drama? So we're going to be focusing on the Khan scenes. We're going to basically like walk through all of the scenes that are about Khan. We're going to skip the, you know, Spock and Savick stuff. You know, who cares about those characters anyway? Spock dies, boohoo. No one cares about that. We're just here for the Khan stuff tonight, baby.
That's right.
And we have Starfleet Sohail on board. So
I know it's nice to be back on the Starship Texas. Thanks for having me. It's a fun time.
Well, before we get started, just a bit of quick housekeeping per usual. I want to give a huge thank you and shout out to the wonderful, delightful Text Trek Patreon supporters who keep the Starship Texas flying. So thank you so very much, Starfleet Sohail, but also Cake is Eternal, Crazy Dutchie, Joanne Robertson, John Daw, Geek Filter, Quarkspar, Matthew Averett, Braxton, Chuck A., Joel Vallis, Arthur Lamoureux, our associate producer, Chris Garris, Dave Farabee, Dave A. Gregory, Joe Saporito, Wanda Valentine, Rin, and our anonymous supporters. And I want to remind everyone that we like to hang out with our patrons once a month, at least once a month, for the Patreon watch party, and our next one is going to be December 13th, and that's actually going to be up to our Division 14 patron, Joel, will be figuring out what episode we watch. December 13th, I know this is always kind of a hard thing to do with Star Trek, is like, what's the Christmassy episodes of Star Trek? It can be a little of a controversial, you know? I know a lot of people are like, oh, Fathery's least favorite movie, Star Trek Generations, is a Christmas movie because it has a Christmas tree in one scene. But
it's more than that. It's just the overall vibes. They're very Christmassy to me.
Mm. Would you think that if it had not had that Christmas tree in it, though?
No.
At least you're honest. I respect that. But I think last year we did Devil's Due because that episode opens with Picard and Data doing a Christmas carol on the holodeck.
That's legit. That's
it's
true.
Very Christmassy for about 3 minutes. But yeah, maybe Joel will let us know what he's selecting. He's currently at Star Trek Chicago with our Federation Council patron, Chris Garris. So they're having a lot of fun without us in Chicago. But that's okay. We wish them well at their convention. If people want to follow Joel's convention shenanigans, he's posting a lot in the Text Trek Discord server, so go check that out. And if you see Joel there, say howdy. He's not the one from Texas. He's from Minnesota, but he's a Texan and a Trek Texan, a Trexan. Yeah, that's what we are. That's what we'll call ourselves now.
Like Kirk says to Spock in Star Trek VI, everyone's a Texan.
Yeah, close enough. Paraphrasing is the theme of the night. but yeah, I don't really have much else to say before our main topic, other than I guess the little bit of Star Trek news we've gotten lately. I'd be curious, Sohail, it sounds like the Kelvinverse is dead, at least as far as Paramount Films is currently concerned. It sounds like there's no plans to do anything new with Secret Hideout on Paramount Plus beyond these couple seasons we got left of Starfleet Academy and Strange New Worlds. If there is, we haven't heard about it yet. But It sounds like the future of Star Trek under its new leadership by the shitty assholes, the Ellisons, who I don't really like. But under their leadership, they're doing this new movie that won't be connected to anything else. That's the only thing they've said. It's not connected to anything. A lot of people think it might be like a universe-wide reboot. But what do you think overall just about like that news in general?
Well, I have to agree with some of your sentiments from last week's stream about the new leadership and how I'm pretty disappointed about it and stuff like that. And then hearing about news like that kind of makes me think that exactly what you said, that they're planning to just like do a brand new take on it. And I'm afraid it's going to be very fascist. But a lot of people didn't get the sarcasm in Starship Troopers, or the satire, I should say, in Starship Troopers.
Yeah, so, over their heads.
Yeah, totally went over their heads. And so I hope it doesn't end up looking like that, Star Trek looking, you know, like that or anything like that. But we'll see. Either way, you know, I am excited that we are going to get the two seasons of Academy. I hope that, you know, most of these folk, these types only see dollar signs. So I hope it does really well so that they continue at least maybe, or give it a proper ending or whatever before they swipe away Secret Hideout. And as far as the movie is concerned, I really hope that if my fears are all wrong and they do kind of clean the slate, that it's something that surprises us all in a positive or in a good way. Like, oh, that's totally something I didn't expect, but is cool. So we'll see. Let's hope. I have a lot of faith that if Trekkies are involved, that we might still be able to get a good story or something like that.
And if they are going to go like super right wing with their stories, like I guess apparently like the Ellisons were like leaning on, is it Tyler Sheridan, whatever, the guy has like 1,000 shows on Paramount Plus, though. He does like all those Yellowstone spinoffs and Tulsa King, right? And yeah, Lioness and Landman, I think. I've never watched any of them, but he's like their big cash cow. And yeah, they told him, like, we want you to make, like, this very, like, a MAGA show celebrating the 250th anniversary of the country coming up. And he's like, I'm going over to Peacock. I got a new contract with Peacock.
See you later.
And now, like, the Ellisons, like, they want to buy Warner Brothers. I'm like, no, don't. If y'all do that, y'all are going to run James Gunn off of DC. Like, they just finally started making, like, good DC stuff with James Gunn in charge. And they're going to come over there and ruin that, too. It's like, I can't have anything nice. But, God
That's
damn it.
That's the point. That's what they try to do. But maybe we'll get Star Trek Nimbus 3 or whatever.
But I'll say this. I hope that their names are John Francis Daly and Jonathan Goldstein, who are doing this new movie. And, you know, like, I hope they make a good movie, I guess. But if it is going to ruin things, I kind of do hope it's in, like, its own continuity, its own universe. You know, like, on Tex Trek, we'll talk about the Kurtzman, Berman, Roddenberry Trek that we like. And these new people can do whatever weird shit they're going to do. But it is kind of an interesting, sad time. But that's okay. We have plenty of these classic stories to talk about, like we're about to do with Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan.
Yeah.
Before we go into this, we can just each give a quick opening statement before we start breaking down all the Khan scenes from that movie. But just... Sohel, do you want to tell us kind of your general thoughts? Do you view things differently in this movie now after listening to the audio drama?
You know, my biggest fear about the Star Trek Khan series, and I was pretty vocal about this, is that it was going to make Khan like a sympathetic character or someone that I was going to like, you know, hate because they ruined the kind of villainy, like the sheer, you know, the madness and the villainy of the character and everything. And I can't, you know, just like you guys, I felt really pleasantly surprised at how good the series came out and how true to Khan it actually ended up being. And I feel like, so I watched Star Trek II, and then I also listened to it like an audio drama in my car because I just really wanted to absorb it. And I have to say that, like, it doesn't change Khan for me in a negative way, but every time he's on screen or like when I hear him now, I kind of hear a combination of him and Naveen Andrews. It's a weird like thing going on, and I can't help but think of all the stuff we learned in the Khan series. It's really neat. It really does put more context into his madness in some ways, and I know we're gonna, you know, deep dive into this in a little bit, but it just kind of like created a nice layer that Kirk, that what's cool about it is that Kirk doesn't know. Like Kirk has no idea of, we know more than Kirk does about these these characters, and it's kind of an interesting thing. So yeah, I really feel like it has changed it, but not in a negative way. I think it has only enhanced Star Trek II, which is my fear was that it would detract from certain things, but no, it's, I feel like it's only enhanced it.
Cool. What about you, Miss Taylor? We watched the movie for the first time after hearing the audio drama earlier this week. Did anything seem different to you?
Honestly, I didn't really feel like it changed my perspective of what happens in The Wrath of Khan very much. I think, if anything, it kind of makes me a little bit weird that he doesn't mention Kali at all, but also I really do feel like they're just extremely high on, like, SETI juice for 10, 15 years, whatever. And, like, maybe he's just, like, a little bit more senile. Like, on top of all of this madness that he naturally has and narcissism, he's a little bit, you know, twisted up in there. So, yeah, I don't know if it really, like, changed the story for me. Like, I feel like when I was watching the story, I was like, well, everything I learned from the Khan show, it just gave more background to Khan. Like, it really rounded out, like Sohel was saying, like, his story and, like, getting more perspective. But I also feel like it didn't add or take away to the plot or a storyline or whatever of The Wrath of Khan for me. But yeah, I mean, I still really enjoy it. I mean, I feel like the Khan audio drama and Wrath of Khan are both extremely great. And I don't feel like it necessarily, like, adds or takes away. Does that make sense? It's pretty neutral to me. Like, I feel like it still is, like, you can watch The Wrath of Khan and not need any of the Khan audio drama and vice versa. Like, you can listen to the Khan audio drama and never watch The Wrath of Khan, which would be sad. But you could still do either without, like, I feel like both are such complete stories on their own. You don't need one without the other, if that makes sense.
That's interesting. You know, when I was rewatching The Wrath of Khan, that's one of the things I was trying to pay attention to, is like, does it make sense that he's never going to talk about his kid? And it actually, like, to me, it's like, oh yeah, there is nowhere in here where I think, like, he would have mentioned Kali at all.
Yeah.
Because, like, he only mentions Marla when he's explaining, like, the SETI eels to check off. It's like, he really doesn't, like, much interest on, like, telling people about, like, his, you know, his catching them up on his backstory. He's got other primary focuses, I guess, like gloating in front of Kirk and really putting the screws to him and stuff. But I found there were a lot of things that I thought, like, oh, that actually makes a lot more sense. Like, you know, why they kept SETI eels in their bunker and, like, oh, I guess, like, they use them for food and, you know, stuff like that. And honestly, the movie is a bit more sad to me when I watch it now, because I think of, you know, what could have been if Joachim hadn't encouraged Khan to lean into vengeance, or if Khan hadn't smashed the radio before getting confirmation from Kali and Delmonda that their craft made it to space. Just like, you know, what if Khan spent those several years just thinking that his kid was all fine somewhere, and then when Chekhov and Terrell show up, he's just like, oh, I just want to, all I care about is, like, I want to learn how my kid is doing, or something like that. Yeah. You know, things could have been better for everyone. It's just like so many more missed opportunities of where things could have been way less terrible. So, cause that's basically the story of Khan, is just like, he tears a lot of shit up for no good reason. He's just like this big, angry, passionate crybaby who throws a massive tantrum that has these huge consequences and ramifications for a bunch of other people, and doesn't get any of the things that he, you know, cared about or wanted or any of his goals. And it's kind of the sad, tragic character, and it's so much more sad and tragic for me now.
Yeah, Khan's like one of those kind of sad, tragic characters that they have these opportunities in front of them, and they just can't, they're so consumed with their, like, whatever it is, in his case, like, vengeance and, like, you know, the survival of his people and being this, like, strong leader, that he doesn't see these opportunities that he clearly misses. And it is sad, because, like, I love that idea of, like, had he known that Kali made it safely, maybe it would have been a different encounter with Terrell and Chekhov, you know, sure. stuff like that. And now I'm wondering, I like your theory about the eels. And now I'm wondering if he just hallucinated that he saw Chekhov, because Chekhov doesn't really say, like, I remember, he's just kind of like going along with
he's
it.
He's just pulling it out of his ass. I remember like, your face.
I never forget a face. And he's hearing weird distorted voices in his head the whole time. He's so addled.
Well, let's talk about that Chekhov encounter. Let's just run through the con scenes of the Wrathicon, you know, starting with how he's introduced to us in the beginning of the movie. There is a Reliant mission, which was kind of weird for Star Trek to do. You know, you see this other starship that's not the Enterprise, that's not Kirk and Spock. It must have been kind of weird for, you know, audience members to see this for the first time in 1982. But Chekhov is now first officer of the Reliant. And their ship is on a mission to find a test bed for the Genesis Project. They need a totally lifeless planet for Carol Marcus. And they think that they're scouting SETI Alpha 6, not knowing that it had blown up years earlier. They get a life reading on the dino scanner, which is a weird thing Nicholas Meyer made up in Wrathicon. Whatever you want to say about the Wrathicon, it is a fantastic movie. It is so well made. But the technobabble is whack as hell. Just go back, just listen to the technobabble. It, like, none of it makes sense. But it's just like a lot of new terminology that no one else has ever says. But
like preeminent matter stuck in a trapped in a matrix or whatever it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, or like like hailing someone on the hyper channel and just
Hyper channel. That's
yeah,
right.
Stuff like that. But Terrell and Chekhov, you know, captain and first officer, go on a cool little scouting mission to see what the life forms are that they picked up on what they think is SETI Alpha 6. And instead, they discover, like, oh, we're on SETI Alpha 5 with the survivors of the Botany Bay. And Khan is really pissed that Kirk stranded them here and never bothered to check up on them.
I think it's funny in the audio drama, I forget how it goes, but they brought up the whole thing of, like, how do you not know that this is SETI Alpha, you know, 6 or whatever?
Did they forget how to count?
Yeah. And I was wondering the same thing. They have all these sophisticated sensors and things like that, yet they can't tell that there was, like, a planet that exploded. I guess 15 years passed, and maybe at this point in SETI Alpha 5's orbit, it probably is, like, right where SETI Alpha 6 was or something, or maybe, I don't know. It's really weird, but it is funny that they don't explain it.
Yeah, I guess the information that the audio drama does give us, though, is that there's a lot of meteorites in this system. You know, the characters were commenting on the shooting stars and stuff. So I guess, like, the explosion of SETI Alpha 6, there's just, like, even more space rocks floating in the system and, like, the SETI Alpha 5, SETI Alpha 6 orbital region. And they could... David Mack has suggested that the planets' orbits intersect, like some of the planets in our system. I think Neptune or Pluto or something. There's some of that
Pluto's
going on.
Pluto's not a planet anymore, but yeah, Pluto intersects Neptune, I think.
So, there's kind of some things in the audio drama that suggest what might have happened here with that, you know, like meteorite confusion and stuff. SETI Alpha 5 moved into SETI Alpha 6's orbit. But yeah, there's not like a full-on explanation. But I think it does make a bit more sense just knowing that the system was full of meteorites. I think that really helps.
Joanne in the audience was saying that the writers had an explanation about that, but it was cut. And shout out to the Salon who had the writers on. Was it last night or... It was last night or sometime this week.
Were they talking to David Mack or Kirsten and Meyer both, or both? Okay.
They had them both on.
Cool. Yeah. David Mack's a great dude. Dave and I talked to him on Text Trek last year, I believe. I would love to talk to Kirsten Meyer. Maybe we'll reach out to them. I don't know. We've talked about Khan a lot for the last couple of months, but if people want more Khan talk, let us know in the live chat, I guess. But you also see that Khan has King Lear on his bookshelf. It's like, oh, that's where Dr. Lear got her last name from. So, Now, every time I see that scene of Chekhov checking out Khan's bookshelf, I'm going to think, like, oh, yeah, that was the King Lear that Kali probably grew up reading, you know?
Oh, and that's one thing. I don't think I thought of Khan as sentimental, but, like, that point, you pointing that out, like, there's that one scene where he was talking to Kali about, like, oh, you're like your mom, you're reading the Shakespeare, but, or, like, you shouldn't be reading, you should be, I forget what it was exactly, but he mentioned something about Shakespeare, and it's cool that he kept her books that she would read and stuff like that. Yeah. So that is kind of neat.
Yeah, that's a good thing to point out, because I definitely didn't even notice that King Lear was on there when we watched it. I saw, like, the top three books, but I didn't read the ones that are vertical.
The other thing that I think is fun, you know, watching this is just seeing, like, the Seti Il pit in, like, the middle of their bunker.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's a cool scene in the movie when there's something crawling around under the sand, and Terrell is just like, what the hell is that? Seeing that part of the movie now, it just kind of hits different to me. It's like, oh yeah, that's like the dinner bowl. That's like where you go to get your supper. Like, that's what the hell that is. But I'm now going to assume that that's why the augments were outside of the bunker when Chekhov and Terrell, I think they were like out on an eel hunt. They probably have to like go like hunt these things every day. And the bugs themselves, they just live off of something in the soil. And then these people just live off of them. And yeah, like Taylor is mentioning, but like knowing that there's ill toxin that all these people are like ingesting, like these, you know, these neurological chemicals that do like weird shit to your brain. If you have one of these things in your ear, it renders you powerless to resist suggestion. So yeah, it has weird psychoactive properties in these bugs. So yeah, who knows what like eating this stuff every day for years is going to do to your mental health.
Yeah, they could also be out scouting for like water or something, but it's kind of weird that they all went together. Like, normally you would leave some people at camp, right? And then like, but it's kind of weird that they just abandoned the whole cargo pod. Like,
and I feel like after,
I guess,
15
for a dramatic
years,
effect,
after 15 years they're probably like, no one's coming, like we need every resource to go out and hunt. Or maybe that's how desperate their situation is too, is like they just need to find food. I would love more context around that. I mean, the eels is one thing, but I'm sure they found other things that they're like, you know, that might have survived. Or, and I wonder, I think Del Monte said the water source would dry up in like 10 years or 5 years or something like that. So it'd be interesting to see how they make water and stuff like that. Are they like turning into Fremen? You know, like, is this how the Fremen began? Like, you know,
you're wasting your water with your tears.
Yeah, exactly.
Stop crying, Joachim. Your dad died 15 years ago.
But they're getting water from something, I guess, because that was the thing that Ivan said, you know, when he's like, oh, all you need to live is water and protein. And I know how to find both, so I don't.
Well, I think
that there's
enough other cave systems that they're probably sourcing water from.
Yeah, there were other systems and that Del Monte had mentioned, other caves that he had mentioned and stuff like that too. It's true.
And then, you know, when Khan reveals himself and his surviving followers, you know, I think he says at one point, he's like, "This is all that remains of my crew." So there's only I think 14 total, counting Khan. It's like Khan and his 13 disciples. He has 13, not 12, which is bad luck. That's why things work out so poorly for him, I guess. you know, we assume these are all the younger people, like the kids. All of the old augments died, and these are like the people who were the teenagers in the audio drama. A couple of girls, I guess, we don't know if any of them are Erica, Joachim's scientist girlfriend, but I don't know if the writers had an opinion on that. I guess maybe we could reach out to them and ask, or get them on the show. But I suspect that the girl who is, when they get to the Reliant, the girl who is sitting next to Joachim is Erica, just because like they're sitting next to each other. So they're boyfriend and girlfriend, right?
Cake is Eternal pointed out that she says, weird, there are only four bunks for all those folks. I think there are other pods around, but we're only seeing this main one here. This is probably Marla's old pod that she was in, I think.
They say pods plural, like Terrell and Chekhov. Okay. They say like that looks like cargo pods. So there's at least two of them.
Yeah, and Khan also said the same, that they were living out of all the cargo pods.
But yeah, I don't think they have many. I think it might just be two.
Oh, this is dark. Joanne thinks they might have eaten some of the weaker ones. That's possible.
Oh my god. I didn't even consider that. I was thinking it was kind of like they would have, you know how in the audio drama, like, Kali got, like, regular rations because she was the youngest? Mm-hmm. And then it was, like, everyone else got cut rations. I was thinking it might be the same, like, in this situation where they were like, okay, the younger people can have more ration and the older people would have less ration.
And that's
like
why
if they
died
did something
off.
Like that. And maybe they chose to die that off in that way, like oldest to youngest or something, just in terms of longevity.
It would make sense to their logic as well. Khan's pecs got extra rations, of course.
Yeah, he was still able to find a weight room and work out, I guess.
Do you know what's weird, though, is like in these pod scenes, there's like a skillet, right? And like a ration pack. So they still have some rations and they're cooking something,
oh, interesting.
At least.
Yeah, you're right.
It's like a good eye. The very first things they see.
Stretched out some of the rations.
But it's weird because Khan does say that the eels are the only native living
indigenous life that survived.
Yeah. So, like, they don't even have the boars anymore to eat and stuff. So I wonder if they're, like, trying to come up with a different way to eat all these eels. They're like, would you like to have sautéed eel today or pan-fried eel or baked eel?
And like, it could be similar to some things that we cook. Like, when you cook it, maybe the poison is different. It mutates, it changes the poison somehow, and so it's not as effective or something.
It cooks it out. Like, yeah. Ivan was just raw-dogging them. Like, he was just eating them straight live. And they're like, actually, we don't want to eat wiggling worms. How about we, like, roast them or something?
Yeah, just mix them with some of the ration packs. Like, if you got, like, some rice and seaweed, you could have seti il sushi. But the line that it kind of makes me laugh because of how untrue it is, but when Khan says, it was only the fact of my genetically engineered intellect that enabled us to survive. I'm like, yeah, that's no. Like, you made so many bad choices in your time on Seti Alpha 5. Your people could have probably done way better if you had just handled things with Delmonda better. But again, you know, that kind of makes sense why Khan doesn't go into too much detail about all that stuff. You know, he's not going to mention all that.
Y'all know that meme that's like, okay, grandma, let's get you to bed. I feel like Joachim and like Erica would be doing that with Khan like once a day.
Mm.
I wonder if Kirk had left them with some food synthesizers too, and maybe they couldn't use them to their full effect, but maybe they could partially use them to do things like water or something like that. Who knows? And then Jill pointed out that they had seaweed in the beginning. Some of these things you could dry and they may last for years. You know, like some of these kinds of things could last for years and years.
Maybe they had boar jerky somewhere down in their caves.
Somewhere, yeah. Something.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's right. Because didn't Delmonda say that they were working on like creating more food and stuff and like dehydrating? I think I remember that in the audio drama that the Elborians were responsible for making the
some
food.
Of that stuff.
Yeah. Good catch.
When Chekhov and Terrell are like, you know, getting like the speech from Khan for the first time, Khan seems almost offended that Terrell hasn't heard the story of Khan. He's like, you mean you never told your captain the tale about when you served under Kirk? And y'all, even though you weren't in the episode, but I guess you were off screen somewhere, and y'all abandoned us and never bothered to check on our progress. That is one thing that the audio drama doesn't try to explain, is why Kirk never checked up on their progress. Other than what Sulu says in the audio drama, is that when you're the captain of a starship, there's a, you know, a lot of, it's a big universe out there, and you kind of have to pick and choose what you're going to focus on. And
yeah.
You know, from Sulu's perspective, it makes sense Kirk never had enough time to come back to the Seti Alpha 5 planet and check on Khan, but...
I mean, remember that time they got stuck in that dimension? Like, who knows? Like, you get stuck like that, it's like, man, I'm not really thinking about going to check up on Khan on Seti Alpha 5. Like, I just had to deal with this whole traumatic thing and get myself out of that before I got stuck there.
Which episode are you talking about?
In the animated series, whenever they get, like, stuck in that other, it's not a dimension, maybe it's like a, but where all the other aliens
There's the time trap.
Yeah, the time trap. Sorry, I don't know the episode titles very well.
No, I was just making sure we.
Well, and like after V'ger, like why would you even think of like there's so many bigger things that happen to them. You know, it's
true. Exactly. It's like a little pinprick, but it's his inflated ego that thinks that he should be more than like this little teeny tiny. Like that's just a normal day for Kirk.
the egocentrism of Khan. Yeah, like in reality, probably by the time we got to the city on the edge of forever, Kirk had stopped thinking about Khan.
I would agree.
But we get the city ills used, weaponized against Chekhov and Terrell here. So I guess I like the audio drama kind of showing us like, well, how did Khan learn what these things can do? You know, how and what was it like when they wiped out 20 of his people like he claims? So I think it's kind of cool to have that context now, watching the infamous ill torture scene where the bugs crawl in their ears.
And it's amazing that Chekhov survived after what happened to Marla and all the other guys. Like, it's kind of cool that he's able to stress out the eel enough that it wants to like.
It's like this is no longer a viable host.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, it always seemed like kind of a very convenient thing for Khan to have, like, oh, right when I need to question you two about, you know, I want to know everything about what Admiral Kirk is up to in this Genesis project that, you know, you didn't expect to find me here, so why were you here? And he's like, you know, it's kind of convenient he has like these creatures that just like make people his obedient slaves. But I think having like that process and the audio drama of seeing it be like, oh, these eels are actually like an inconvenience for so long before they ever become like a something that is a utility to Khan. It honestly makes it seem more realistic, I guess. It's an easier pill to swallow.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like less of like a, you know, Nicholas Meyer's contrivance that worked out in the Wrath of Khan.
Yeah, I also felt like the eels were actually less scary watching them now in the Wrath of Khan than we did in the audio drama, because I felt like, because it was so new in the audio drama, you know, like it was like it almost felt like a larger setback, you know, or like a bigger, I don't know what the right word I'm trying
to say.
It was
more of a threat. It was a bigger obstacle.
Yeah, exactly. And so like whenever it's like in this situation, I almost am like less scared about it, because I feel like there were such higher stakes in the audio drama, like with the set of eels, than what happens to these two. Like I'm kind of like surprised how long Terrell and Chekhov last with the eels compared to like, I feel like they were picked off pretty quick. Like in some of the audio drama, like it was really quick development. You know, they went crazy faster.
The eels might be diminished as well in some way because of all the chaos on SETI Alpha, you know, like I was just saying in the chat that maybe they adapted to like something extreme, like eating sand, for example, and maybe they're only small now. And maybe those small, like, I think in the audio drama, they established that there's like a queen that kind of lays all these, you know, eel eggs. And then there's worker eels that go and, you know, take the eels out so that they can, the baby eels out so they can infect others. But it seemed like in the audio drama that that the queen eel was pretty formidable and sizable, and maybe the other eels might have been big too, but maybe they're all like these little eels now, and so they're producing less powerful toxin and less powerful, you know, offspring and stuff like that. And so it's possible that that gave them the advantage, that the eels at their full potency couldn't, you know, would have killed them easily. Yeah,
they're probably like way less healthy now that their habitat has been wrecked. So
yeah,
but you know, like we really never know how long I guess someone can last with the ill in their head from the audio drama, because like the one case that we kind of follow the longest with Richter, it's like Khan killed Richter prematurely so they could do the autopsy. So
Fair.
Maybe you last like a week or so with one of these. I don't know. But yeah, at least a few days for sure.
Yeah.
So after Khan gets Terrell and Chekhov under his control, that's when it's kind of funny. But Chekhov messages Dr. Marcus and tells her, like, oh, good news, the SETI Alpha 6 planet is going to be the perfect test site, so the Reliant is actually going to come over to your station, and we're taking all of the Genesis material. And she's just like, what? you're supposed to be working for me. Now you're telling me you're going to take all of my work? So, yeah, she is, understandably pissed off about that. And when she asks, who gave you these orders, it kind of seems like Chekov is just having to, the last person he was just talking about, last Starfleet officer, last, Starfleet brass he mentioned was Admiral Kirk to Khan when Khan's like, tell me all this stuff about Admiral Kirk. But I don't know if it was like if Khan told Chekov to say Kirk or if this is what Chekov came up with. But
oh, I think it's actually really funny because you can read it two different ways. Like how mm-hmm. you're saying like, oh, Chekov is just like on the fly, like, oh, yeah, Admiral James T. Kirk,
That's kind of how Koenig played it.
But it also could be like he's resisting Khan's influence, trying to not rat out Kirk. Mm. Whereas like the order comes from and he's like, I don't want to say it, but then he it has to come out because he's under the influence of SETI Eel.
And it could be that Khan told him to say Kirk so that it would somehow force Kirk to be involved.
For sure. He definitely wants him involved and wants him to come to them. So I think I read it more now, like Khan planted that seed to Chekov to say, and he's actually really, because at first it kind of sounds like he's forcing it. Like he's making it up, but now I think it's more
the other thing I never thought about before the audio drama that does change something about Star Trek 2. Maybe you guys picked up on this before, but now I especially was like, I think he was going to take the Genesis device and use it on Earth.
Because in the
audio drama, he's like, when he's talking about revenge, he's like Earth, he fully hates Earth. Like it could be that he was going to use the Genesis device on Earth. And I'm like, wow, that's crazy.
He wants to wipe out humanity.
So many of the movies do try to have Earth in jeopardy. And I was always thinking Star Trek 2 is one of the few movies that doesn't try to do that. But I don't know. Maybe it does after all. Maybe Khan was going to come destroy Earth.
I kind of read it now actually more that he would have probably taken it to SETI Alpha 5 and been like, redo. He was so pissed off that he couldn't fucking settle SETI Alpha 5. He could have done that.
That's true.
And okay, well, it's mostly dead anyway. The only thing he's going to be killing or all these SETI eels that he has massive beef with, maybe Kirk isn't really his enemy, it's actually the fucking eels, and he's I'm gonna go launch this probe onto SETI Alpha 5, fuck up all of these eels and start over, and now I'm gonna conquer this planet for real. And he's literally gonna play God, because that's what he wants to be, right?
I kind of like that.
Brilliant. Yeah, I love that.
I
feel like that should be an alternate universe comic book or something. That's great.
Yeah, Star Trek What If. I always just kind of thought that he was just going to keep the Genesis device. And, it's kind of like a North Korea situation. It's like, I have a weapon of mass destruction. I'm going to be as crazy as I want, and y'all won't fuck with me.
Right.
So, I'll restart your planet.
But I don't know, maybe he did have bigger ambitions with it. But yeah, but either way, when Chekov tells Carol Marcus the lie that Admiral Kirk ordered us to come take your work from you, Khan is like, okay, that's perfect. Chekov is like, you realize, sir, she'll contact Kirk to confirm the orders. And Khan is like, hell yeah, I'm counting on it. And, when that happens, when Carol does try to call her ex Kirk and be like, what the hell are you doing to me, Jim? They have the jam transmission from the Reliant. And then it's kind of this cool moment where you see the bridge of the Reliant after that, and Joachim trying to talk Khan out of his revenge quest against Kirk. He says, hey, Khan, you're so smart. You've already proven you're superior to Kirk. You defeated his plan to strand us on that planet. Why can't we just, forget about him and we can go do whatever the hell we want? And that's when Khan does the he tasks me speech that's, real famous. But I'll chase him around the moons of Nibia, around the Antares Maelstrom, and round Perdition's flame before I give him up. But the fun little kind of structural thing in the movie, and why part of why I think it's such a great movie, is that right after he says that, that's when he says, prepare to alter course. And there's this whole, like, misdirect in the movie where you don't realize it, but then when it cuts to Kirk, Spock, and McCoy watching the Pixar animation of the Genesis device, while that's going on, that's when Khan and the Reliant crew are at the Regulus station and tearing that place up and, you know, looking for the Genesis device that they talk about later. And he strands Terrell and Chekhov there as, like, his secret agents, but all that happens off screen, and the way that the movie unfolds is you don't suspect something there, but there's that little line from Khan, prepare to alter course, and then, you know, after that, we have Spock and Uhura on the Enterprise be like, oh, we can't get the Regulus station on the phone, but they're not being jammed anymore. And Spock has the line, you know, two possibilities. They either don't want to respond or they can't respond. And that's because they were under attack by Khan off screen.
Joachim is one of the characters that definitely the context of his story actually makes me feel more for the character watching Star Trek 2 because of what you said about how, like, Khan, like, kind of botched his only conscience, if you will, like the one person that could have, you know, maybe kept him, you know, on a path that led to success, but also just like what everything that Joachim went through in the audio drama. Now I see him here and I feel like he's so defeated. It's just, it's that sadness again, but it's more, you know, even more enhanced and stuff like that. Yeah, it's like, it's crazy. And I can kind of picture the little kid, you know, the teenager or whatever, the young kid growing up into this, you know, person. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I almost wonder if this is the first time he kind of, you know, questions Khan in this movie. You know, you see him kind of stand up to him a little bit softly.
Later on, yeah. But no, later where he's like, no, you know, like, and he's like, damn you.
No, yeah, he does eventually get to the point where he tells Khan, like, no, sir. And it's like, that's really the first time Joachim has ever said those words to this man. But, you know, like the thing that I really appreciate about the audio drama is how they had Joachim be the guy who encouraged Khan to, you know, focus on revenge, just lean into your hatred of Kirk. And, you know, here Joachim's trying to talk him out of it, and how it's still at the end of the day, it's still that Khan is the biggest villain of all of this, because Joachim at one point knew better. Delmonda had taught Joachim, you know, like, revenge is pointless. Right. And Khan is like, that's bullshit. Never repeat anything that dumb asshole ever said ever again. So it's like, Khan made Joachim worse, and then in turn, you know, Joachim made Khan worse, but it's still kind of Khan's fault. It was really cool how that was structured.
Yeah. And now we also have a reason why he's kind of his right-hand guy. It's like he was his champion, that whole thing. You know, there's like there's you don't really understand why Joachim is the, you know, you don't get that context still now.
That's probably my biggest takeaway, honestly, from the audio drama and now rewatching The Wrath of Khan, is I appreciate Joachim so much more now.
Mm-hmm.
So we should watch that actor in the Next Generation episode, Symbiosis. It also has the guy who played David Marcus. We should watch that soon. Maybe we can do a backtracking retrospective on that.
That'd be cool.
Let's move on to the first battle of the Reliant versus Enterprise. One of the most famous spaceship battles in all of science fiction. So this would
famous be, and one of the best.
One that a lot of other ones have learned from.
Yeah.
So this would be after the off-screen raid on the Regulus station that we don't know about yet. The audience doesn't know about. But at some point after that, then the Reliant intercepts Enterprise, and it's like the cool sneaky thing where they just proceed as if their communication systems are down, and wait till they get really close, and you get like that famous line of Joachim, like, their shields are still down, and Khan's like, of course, we're all one big happy fleet, and Khan is so happy to just finally, like, get to attack Kirk. And, you know, not only does he get like he's able to deal Kirk this big blow right off the bat and kind of set the stage of the battle and the power dynamic and set the tempo, just like really like take control of the battlefield immediately. But then like he gets to like come on screen and gloat. And we know from the audio drama, he's like, he spent all this time on SETI Alpha 5, you know, preparing these villain speeches. And, you know, he says like, I often think what I would say if I ever saw Kirk again. It's like, yeah, we can tell, Khan.
Yeah, I like when we were watching it and you pointed out, oh, Joachim is smiling so much because he never has to hear this speech ever again.
Actually. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, Joachim, Erica, all of those augment kids that have survived, they just hear Khan like give like these speeches all the time. So yeah, that was my joke, is like, yeah, they're thrilled to like never have to hear this again. Like they're finally gonna hear it for the last time.
Yeah. He's probably like, did anyone record that? Like, I need to watch that back.
Jill in the audience is asking, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's a funny thing. Jill is asking if David Mack explained why everyone is blonde now. My theory is that they had to use SETI eel poison as shampoo and it bleaches their hair.
Oh my God. Everything is resolvable by SETI eels. Toxins, it's everywhere. I was going to also bring up that this is the first time I've watched this and realized that why would Khan know the Klingon proverb, the dish best served cold? And then I was like, oh, well, he had all of Marla's history stuff he could have reading and catching up on, I guess. But like when we watched Space Seed, he didn't really know any of the alien stuff, right? Like, I don't know. So that was kind of an interesting thing for him to say, I guess, to know about Klingons.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I used to wonder about that as a kid. I was always like, how do you know about Klingons? Like, when did you ever meet a Klingon? Yeah. But maybe Delmonda mentioned that to him.
Though, yeah, or he could have been in Marla's, like, logs. Or not logs, but she was a historian, so maybe she had something about Klingons in that.
And there's some time jumps, like, not, like, too big of a time jump, but in between episodes, like, it's very possible, like, when they're, like, hanging out on the beach, she's like, let me tell you, you guys think you're tough, but there's a species called Klingons. I'd love to see you go up against them. And he's like, oh
my God.
These Klingons seem interesting.
He's probably like, I have to come up with another speech for the next time the first time I meet a Klingon, you know? Klingon, I got to know their proverbs. I have to be able to speak their language. I want to be friends, but I want to fight them at the same time.
Legit. Mm.
Just a comment on the movie itself a bit, though. I have always really appreciated that conversation between Khan and Kirk. And I guess it's like the way both characters are presented, that whole battle, is that even though Khan has this, you know, gray hair and, you know, he looks kind of like this old man, he's still presented as with like such strength and energy, and just, you know, he's just vibrant, you know, and Kirk is just kind of like this dopey old man. He's, you know, he's struggling with like getting older, which he's not, like, I think Admiral Kirk is actually celebrating his 52nd birthday, assuming this movie takes place in 2280. I was like, yeah, that's not even like that old. Like, I have so many friends over 50 nowadays, but
yeah, but you know what, in the 70s and 80s, like 50 looked different than it did today, than it does today. Like, we have a lot more youth longevity technology than they did.
But this is, it was Nicholas Meyer, you know, he was trying to show that on purpose, that, you know, like Khan has, he's, you know, this is the day he's been looking forward to all his life. And Kirk is like, this has never occurred to him. This is going to be happening. And, you know, he's just caught off guard. And at a point in his life where he can't get his mojo back. And I don't know, it was just all well done way back in 1982. No matter how many times I watched the movie, I still appreciate it now. The other thing that I wanted to comment on here is when Khan, you know, he requests for Kirk and also the Genesis data, and maybe he'll spare the ship. And then after that, it's kind of like two boxers have to go in their corner, and they're like, they're with like their coach, and you have, you know, kind of a Kirk and Spock have their backs turned to the view screen, and they're having one conversation. And then on the view screen, you see like Khan and Joachim are doing the same thing. So there's so many parallels between like the Khan and Joachim versus like the Kirk and Spock. And it's something that I actually started noticing a lot after I first showed this movie to Taylor How long ago was that when we watched Wrath of Khan?
Over a year ago.
Over a year ago, but it's something that you pointed out was like, oh yeah, like Kirk and Spock, and you know, the way that like Spock just offers Kirk the captain's chair. He's like, you know, you're a better commander if we go into actual combat and stuff like that. And then the way that Kirk listens to Spock's advice, and you compare that to Khan and Joachim, and how Joachim frequently gives Khan good advice that Khan constantly rejects. And
yeah, he shuts down Joachim so much, but Kirk is really open to suggestion. The other thing, actually watching the movie this time, having known that Khan almost had his Spock with Delmonda, mm-hmm. it made a lot of these scenes a little bit sadder for me too, because I was like, man, like imagine Delmonda in the seat of where Joachim is and having like his knowledge and like wise empathy, you know, like just generally a better person than like,
I love that
Khan, you know, so I love that. I
that's
Delmonda.
That's one of my only minor things about the audio drama is I wish Delmonda hadn't said the whole I have been and always, you know, will be your friend
we'll
thing,
because
it kind of I was like, that's a little too on the nose.
Too
like,
on the nose.
Agree.
Yeah.
It was way too similar. They could have
but,
said the
but considering
same
how
thing
phenomenal,
in a different way.
In a different way. But considering how phenomenal the series is, I can forgive that, you know, and just kind of like look past it.
Yeah.
Fortunately, the Enterprise survives the battle with the Reliant because Spock and Kirk use the prefix code. That's what they transmit instead of the Genesis data that drops the shields on the Reliant. So it's the kind of a trick you can only use one time, because after this, you know, the Reliant's not going to let the, you know, we're not going to accept any more text messages from you, basically, after that. But I like the, you know, like Joachim's big reaction when he's like, the shields, that you know, they're going down. And like when Khan is like, well, raise them. And then Joachim's like, I can't. And
yeah.
You know, they become the ones caught off guard. But yeah, it's just like that whole like Khan and Joachim dynamic and how that is kind of the mirror image of the Kirk and Spock dynamic.
Yeah.
Definitely something that I appreciate more now watching the movie.
It was also interesting seeing them in the ship and kind of having more context that they were gonna have a different ship, and so maybe they did learn a lot of these like space travel things like from the Elborians, because I always kind of thought it was a little ridiculous that they could just like get in the spaceship and take it over and know how to fly it and use it. And I mean, maybe it's not too dissimilar from the Botany Bay, but I don't know. I think it was kind of interesting. Like, I was kind of even thinking, like, oh, Paolo probably would have done better in this role.
Yeah.
You know? But
yeah, he would come in handy.
Y'all made that comment last time about, like, how freely they gave Khan the schematics to the Enterprise, like, in Space Seed. So maybe he remembered all that stuff from that and, like, you know, and kind of knew like where everything would be.
Well, y'all keep in mind they also had Terrell and Chekhov as like their slaves for a couple of days, so they were probably like,
that's
okay,
right.
For the next
run
20
the ship.
Yeah, for the next 24 hours you're giving the rest of my gang a tutorial on every station, every panel on this ship. And they're all pretty smart kids, so they're probably quick learners.
I have a question about their clothes, like what
the eels.
This man said eels. What was that like? Were those jackets maybe what the Elborians wore or something like that?
Oh,
or
I like that.
You know, like,
thank
you. Like,
oh my god, that would have been so cool if they did the audio drama. If that had been like a TV show, and like when the Elborians arrive, they're wearing like these like that kind of that orange brown vest, whatever color that, but like, you know, basically like the clothes that Joachim and Khan and the rest of the gang are wearing. If the Elborians arrived on City Alpha 5 and they're dressed like that, and like, you know, you as the audience would know, like, well, things ain't gonna go well for them, because I know where those clothes are gonna end up. Maybe that's where that came from.
Because that was one of my mysteries always, is like, where, you know, like they weren't wearing that in Space Seed. Like, how'd they get these clothes? Right. You know, so it's like
in Space Seed, they only had the red jumpsuits and then the gold fishnets, and that's like,
right?
What, you know, I guess that was like your eugenics war uniform, and then like you had like the gold fishnet pajamas, I guess. That's what you wear into cryo sleep. But
The other thing I wanted to bring up is how many times Khan calls Kirk Admiral. Like, he's so pissed. And it cracks me up. I mean, like, it always has. But I think, like, this time, like, just knowing, like, how much shit he's put up with between Space Seed and now, and he's just been, like, angry about Kirk for so long, and then just found out that he was promoted, and he's like, this motherfucker got promoted? Are you shitting me?
Yeah.
And now he's, like, every time he sees Kirk, he refuses to say his name. He's just like, Admiral, Admiral. Like, it's so...
I've given you no assurances, Admiral.
He's so pissed off. He's like amused at the same time. Like, how could you, of all people, get a promotion? You don't even check up on your previous, like, abandoning, like, situation. Like, you don't even go check on the people you've marooned. How can you get a promotion?
Every time I say the word Admiral, I picture Ricardo Montalban saying Admiral.
It's such a different way he says it. It's like more guttural. Like, yeah. He's like, it like rolls in the back of his throat almost.
Yeah.
But that would be a fun animal name if we had a dog named Admiral.
Admiral Kirk.
Oh my gosh, that's
Admiral Jerk? That could have been a good name for Amos.
That's probably what Khan was saying in his head.
Yeah, Admiral Kirk. More like Admiral Jerk.
We should do a comedy version of The Wrath of Khan.
Oh, in the old days, Sohel and I used to do like drunk script readings of Star Trek movies.
We should. Miss Taylor, will you join us for one? We got to do really a drunk script reading. That's fun.
Moving on, the Reliant gets shot by some Enterprise phaser blasts and decides to retreat. They successfully blew up Scotty's nephew, though, and severely injured the Enterprise. Speaking of which, the Enterprise goes to Regula 1. So at this point, when the Enterprise arrives, the Reliant must be like hiding on the other side of the asteroid, planetoid, whatever it is. You know, you kind of see this, the two ships can hide from each other by going to the other side of it. When they arrive in orbit of the Regula planetoid and the station, there's no one on the station. No one's answering the phone. So Kirk, McCoy, and Savick beam over, and they find Terrell and Chekov shoved in a cabinet, which, you know, that's another kind of thing in this movie that, for a movie that's rated PG, it has a lot of just really, like, brutal moments. Like, the Seti Ill crawling in the ear, and then, like, the discovery of Chekov and Terrell in this cabinet, and just, like, the way Shatner plays that, I was just like, oh my god, like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Like, just kind of sickly images. All of the blood and gore of the dead scientists.
They're literally strung up. Mm-hmm. That's pretty terrible.
Yeah. Today I feel like the MPAA might even like struggle giving that like a PG-13. They might be like, you have to cut back some of those blood shots or you're going to get an R rating.
It makes me actually curious that it's in The Penguin they had like people strung up. And like, I don't know what that show is rated, but I feel like that show is pretty much rated R in my opinion, but I don't even know.
It is. If you're like TV shows are don't go through the MPAA. They have a but
I don't know shit.
If it's on if it's on streaming, it doesn't. Well, I don't know who does it, but I guess it's just TV MA for television in general. So the equivalent of rated R. Rachel in the live audience is asking there was no PG-13 at this time, and that's correct. PG-13 didn't come out till 1984. Fairly confident. I could be wrong, but I'm just gonna white man confidence be like, yes, it was 1984.
So this movie was like on the cusp. Basically.
Yeah, yeah. It might have been one of the reasons. Yeah,
yeah. Yes.
It was like that was too much for my kid, guys. Oh, that's funny.
But yeah, you know, it's so funny if Khan knew more about Kirk's situation on this Regula station, he could have fucked with them so much. Like, think if Khan knew, like, oh, wait a minute, that's Admiral Kirk's baby mama and kid. And then it's I lost my wife kid and daughter. And so it's for the best.
It could have gone a lot worse. It's true. Yeah.
It's for the best he didn't know. I guess none of the beans are spilled on that when they're on the, you know, the communicator with, and I guess like this whole time, Khan is also eavesdropping through Terrell. But, you know, while Khan, you know, thinks he's playing Kirk and has, you know, like a trick up his sleeve, Kirk and Spock are talking in code this whole time. So, you know, if we go by the book, hours will seem like days and 2 days to get the ship repaired and all of that. But when they beam into the center of the regular planetoid and they find Carol and David and the other scientist that doesn't last very long, that's, you know, Kirk is having like this really like difficult moment, you know, coming face to face with his son who's like yelling at him and stuff and like hates him. And then he sees his ex just be like, come on, David, you're only making things worse. And that's when Terrell is like, oh, I believe it's even worse than you thought, or, you know, whatever he says. It was, when it rains, it pours kind of thing. Yeah, the betrayal, I guess, of, oh, it turns out Terrell and Chekhov were working for Khan this whole time. And the poor scientist who gets zapped.
Crossfire. Something that kind of caught me by surprise watching this, too, is I think that Chekhov and Terrell are not acting. Like, I feel like they're so sus. And maybe that's just because as an audience, you know that they're infected. But even still, like, they tell them when they get out of the cargo box thing, like, they put these creatures in us and we're doing mind. Like, you would think they would scan them right then and be like, oh, the creature is in your body.
Yeah, like Dr. McCoy, bust out the medical tricorder on these guys.
He's right there. Like, what is he even doing in this scene if not his job? He's like, just staring at the wall.
Like, McCoy asked to go on this away mission.
Yeah.
And then, like, he doesn't do anything. He just, like, stands around next to Kirk.
And, like, when Chekhov and Terrell are not speaking, their faces are blank. Like just nothing there. Like, it feels so suspicious. And it's so weird that McCoy, you know, didn't scan them for creatures in their body after they said that there were creatures in their body. That is weird.
I will say maybe they're so distracted by the horrific kind of scene of it all that they didn't have time to notice. And it could be a trauma response too. Maybe McCoy was thinking, oh, this is a trauma response. Like, maybe he thought they were weird, but he's thinking, like, what if I had to watch, like, I think he says that he was flaying them or skinning.
Yeah, the
it's like,
I have the quote here. Terrell says, he tortured those people, but none of those people would tell him anything. He went wild. He slit their throats. He wanted to tear the place apart, but he was late. He had to get back to the Reliant in time to blow you to bits. So I guess, McCoy thinks, okay, they're probably just, like, dehydrated and shell-shocked. If they're saying things like, he put creatures in our bodies, that, like,
I would have scanned him. Yeah,
the doctor needs to bust out the medical tricorder at that point. Let's be real. Like, that's inexcusable. Inexcusable,
also,
Dr. McCoy.
Weird that Savick wouldn't have been like, hey, let me scan them. Like, she's scanning everything on this fucking station except for the people. Like, she scanned the box for life forms and was like, hey, in here. But she didn't scan them when they were out. It's just odd.
Yeah, it is a little weird. But we could,
And I guess one thing that the audio drama maybe would have had an opportunity to try to explain, not saying that it was obligated to do this, because it didn't, and that's okay. But yeah, there's not really an explanation on why Chekhov is able to survive his SETI ill. You know, he's like the only person we know about who, like, he passes out and the ill, you know, comes out of his ear covered in blood and Kirk zaps it with his phaser. But I guess we don't know why that is, other than I guess the implication that, like, Chekhov just loved Kirk so much. Kirk is like that great of a captain that a former crew member couldn't betray him.
Another insult to Khan.
Man, it's so funny. I never read it that way. I always imagined that SETI eel inside Chekhov saw what happened to Terrell and was like, oh, that's not going to be me. I'm going to get myself out of this body. Like, I don't want to be next. Or it was like Chekhov had been kind of like a bad host for the eel and who's like gotta abandon this body. But I do love that eel like worm thing comes out of Chekhov and Kirk immediately zaps it. He's like, we don't have time for this shit.
Yeah, to like, figure this thing out.
He was like, that's not going into anyone else. Like, we're done with the eels at this point.
That's one of the reasons why I applaud the movie so much and just, you know, love to gush all over it and dump tons of praise on this movie. But just like little moments like that, it is so satisfying to have like this horrific eel that's just like, it's painful to look at, it so hideous. So when like when Kirk zaps it, you're like, fuck yeah, I'm glad that thing died in front of me.
Also, you know, when Terrell was resisting and then he ends up shooting himself, it's possible the eels can communicate with one another, and the other eel heard the distress or whatever and probably was like, I gotta bail out of this guy because And who knows, that could have been the solution to, you know, another sad thing is tragically, like, because of, you know, the circumstances, they never really had that situation. So who knows, that could have been the solution to getting the eels out, like a frequency or something that like scares the hell out of them and causes them to have their flight, you know, response activated.
Such a good point that they never figured out how to remove the eels, like, without killing the host. So,
Or maybe Chekhov just, like, drinks so much vodka, and then, you know, it's like Ivan said, like, the SETI eel toxin is similar to vodka. It was like a, it created, like, a chemical imbalance in the eel, and it was basically, like, too drunk to function. I don't know. I'm really reaching,
that.
But...
No, I love that more. That's why Ivan never got infected. They could smell the vodka on him.
What else cracks me up in this scene is, like, Kirk just, like, zaps that eel. And I think pretty spectacular aim. Gets on, like, the communication device, and he calls Khan a poor marksman missing his target. Yeah. You've killed everyone else except for the one person. And I think that is so good. Like, right after he, like, nailed this worm, like, amazing target, he gets on the phone and is like, ha! Like, I'm like, better than you, but like
he just did like a demonstration of being a good mark. But Taylor, that makes so much sense because Kirk is like hear me out here. Kirk is the three-dimensional chess player, like literally. Yeah. Like that's the first shot of Shatner as Kirk in all of Star Trek history is him playing three-dimensional chess with Spock. And so you have here, you know, kind
and beating
of
him.
The theme of this, and beating this Vulcan with like the super logic brain. So like the theme of this movie, you know, or I guess not the theme, but one of the points that hammers home is that, you know, Khan has limited thinking and Kirk a bit thinks a bit more broadly. And here, like maybe Kirk is, you know, we know that he's trying to piss off Khan, like he's playing Khan. He doesn't want him to realize that how easily they're going to be able to get back to the Enterprise in 2 hours. But he's definitely trying to piss off Khan, and so like teasing him, like, I just did a demonstration of how to be a good marksman, and you pathetic asshole, you keep missing the target.
Yeah.
I love that. That's great.
It's so good. I love the dialogue so much.
It's so good.
Yeah, and it's so funny because like how many times now has Khan tried to kill Kirk? Like, we could probably count on both hands at this point. And he's like, holy shit, this motherfucker's still alive. Like,
And then like, you know, Kirk does try to bait Khan into coming down to the planetoid. He's like, if you want me, you're going to have to come down here. But, you know, instead Khan is smart enough to just like beam up the Genesis device and he tells Kirk, okay, I will do worse than kill you. I will bury you alive at the center of a dead planet like you did to me. And then the famous, you know, Kirk screaming Khan. It's not Shatner overacting. It is Admiral Kirk overacting. Because this is all just an act for Khan. This is Kirk wanting Khan to think like, okay, you got the Genesis device. You stranded me. You've won. So like when Kirk is screaming Khan, it's like, that's fake outrage at Khan. And Khan falls for it. Because like we get like that, the big reaction from Kirk screaming Khan in the communicator. And then when it cuts to Khan, to his reaction.
He's so satisfied, yeah.
I wrote in my notes, because I don't know how else to describe this, but I wrote in my notes, almost orgasmic glee when Kirk screams Khan. That's kind of like Khan is so, he's like, he has like that satisfaction. He's like, I pissed you off so much, I made you scream my name.
Doesn't Ivan scream his name like that too?
Yeah.
In the audio drama? Yeah.
Which might have also been a little too fan servicey, but yeah, that one that did not bother me. It makes sense. Like, if Sohail, if you really pissed me off, it would make sense for me to just be like, Sohail! Like, that one's a little bit more common. Like,
yeah.
But yeah, it would be weird to just be like, well, I don't know. I would also tell you, I have been and always shall be your friend. But it would be weird to say that if I hadn't seen The Wrath of Khan.
I feel like, yeah, I feel like you'd say, like, friends for life or something, but, you know, the I have been and always shall be is very specific.
Very specific.
I have a question for you guys. So Khan beams out the Genesis device, right? And he knows that Kirk is there, right? Why doesn't he beam up the life signs from that cave to the Reliant so he can fuck them up?
It's because he wants to leave them buried alive.
I feel like he would have more satisfaction, like, literally beating him up.
I feel like he's doing this because he's got to go do something else, like, with the Genesis device, somehow, like, get a stronghold or whatever. But then in, like, a year, he would come back and he'd be like, see, you never kept up on my promise.
I checked on you, but
I've
check
kept up on
me.
Your promise. Like, he wanted to prove to Kirk that he would actually come back and
yeah,
think about
like it isn't that hard to just to come back and check on you. But yeah, maybe that was his plan. He's like, okay, the Enterprise is going to be crippled for 2 days. I have all the time in the world to just cruise on over to the other side of this rock and blow her up, and then I'll come back and gloat to Kirk and like, I just killed all of your friends on your ship. So I guess that's
to make it even worse. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. But you know, he got a little overzealous, as he tends to do. Because then when the Reliant goes off to hunt the Enterprise, and they pull up to the station, and the Enterprise isn't there, it's on the other side of the Regula planetoid. Regula 1 is the name of the station, not
and
the
Regula
planet.
Right, but the planetoid Regula is Regula. And,
yes.
And by the way, Regula and Pluto are the same. They're planetoids. They are not planets. So... just
are
FYI,
they dwarf
Pluto
planets?
People.
I thought that was what
they wouldn't
Pluto
even consider like Pluto hardly has any rock, it's mostly ice. Like, if Pluto were to get closer to the sun, it would basically look like a comet, it would have a tail and stuff like that. So,
that's pretty
cool. But yeah, Regula is not a planet, and neither is Pluto. Sorry, Plutonians.
Pluto is technically considered a dwarf planet, which is separate from a planet.
Oh, it is considered a dwarf.
Yeah,
planet.
I read like the first sentence on the Wikipedia page, and that's my conclusion. So that was the deep research I just did.
Deep.
But yeah, so Khan got tricked. Turned out the Enterprise got repaired in a couple of hours, not a couple days, and they beamed their landing party back on board, and they head off to the Matara Nebula because their shields are still down. But if they go in this nebula, neither ship will have sensors or shields, so they think it'll be a level playing field. And I guess that's also, like, you know, Khan has a choice here. Khan still has the Genesis weapon, so, you know, he could have gone off and done a lot of shit, but the only thing he wanted to do was go get revenge on Kirk.
Well, especially after, like, the way he, like, duped him, you know, he's like...
Yeah, yeah, I can't let it end with, you know, Kirk defeating me. It's got to end on my victory over him. It's got to be, like, our final interaction. So...
It's interesting, this fades into Star Trek 3, but talking about the Genesis planet and planetoids and all that stuff, and the cave that and everything like that, it's interesting that both SETI Alpha and the Genesis planet were doomed to... basically not survive. Like, they were, like, you know, like, it's an interesting thing just in the sense of, like, how, like, you know, because David cheated, like, the Genesis planet also didn't have a chance, even though, like, it was created by Khan. Like, in a way, it was like his, like, you know, it was like the, like, from this awful thing, this, at least this planet kind of arrived, but then in the next movie we find out that it's also destined to be doomed, you know, like, and it's gonna be destroyed as well. So that's crazy.
I like that that moment when the Reliant is pursuing the Enterprise into the nebula, And, you know, Joachim says something like, sir, if they go in there, we'll lose them. And Khan says, explain it to them. And they you know, shoot that torpedo at the Enterprise. But yeah, there's so many, like, great visuals there, too. Just the, you know, it's hard to believe, you know, Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan had the lowest budget of any Star Trek movie, yet it has some of the best looking visual sequences ever. But yeah, there's a lot of good, like, Khan and Joachim interactions in the Nebula battle. The fun one being the one we talked about earlier when Joachim finally just says, no, sir, you have Genesis. You can have whatever you want. And Kirk does the full power, damn you. It's the full speed ahead. You know, Moby Dick has to go kill his will, as Lily Sloan from First Contact would say.
Yeah, that was on his shelf.
Yeah.
And he quotes a lot of Moby Dick in here, and he, you know, paraphrased some of it to make it like a, you know, outer spacey. But the whole, like, you know, cat and mouse game, the two ships, they can't see each other. So it does result in Spock telling Kirk that, you know, Khan has intellect, but he doesn't have experience. And it is kind of weird. Like, I'm sure, like, Khan in the 1990s during the eugenics war, like, he was aware of, you know, submarines and airplanes and three-dimensional combat maybe shouldn't have been this big of a shock to him. But I guess it's, like, thematically in the movie, that's kind of the point, is, like, and as the audio drama would call it, the limits of his imagination. He has limited thinking.
Can you remind me if Kirk talks to Khan and Khan knows that he's on the Enterprise? Because I know, like, he gets beamed back up on the Enterprise, but Khan thinks he's in the cave. Do they have a, like, does he realize that Kirk is on the Enterprise, or does he think that he's in the
cave? No, I think he does realize it, because he says something about, I'm laughing. Like, he says something about, like,
oh, yeah. I'm laughing at the superior intellect. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they let him know. Like, Kirk taunts Khan to chase him into the nebula.
Oh, and they would know, because it's a comms. It's comms. Yeah, that's right. And it's comms coming from the Enterprise, too, so they would know that way as well.
Okay, yeah. Cool. Thanks. I was having a hard time remembering if that interaction had happened.
I guess, like, the most vulnerable we see Khan in this movie, and kind of the most, like genuinely upset, is when the Reliant takes some phaser fire. There's those explosions on the bridge, and Joachim is killed by falling debris. And he just, you know, his final words, yours is the superior. Like, even there at the very end, you know, Joachim was, you know, he was still looking up and respecting his cult leader, Khan. And then Khan's reaction, I shall avenge you. Like, oh, like, this is something that Kirk did. This is something I'm going to have to go get revenge against Kirk for. It's like, that's always his answer to everything. It's like, I'll just blame Kirk and take it out on him. But it's like yeah. You know, it's so clearly to the audience and anyone paying attention, it's like, oh, this was your fault, Khan. Like, you're the reason why this boy is dead.
Mm-hmm. Because of his chase of Kirk. And now he's like, I shall avenge you by killing Kirk. Which is like, well, that's how you got in this situation, dude.
But this, you know, again, like, his limited thinking, the limits of his imagination. He puts his brain in these very narrow perimeters. And it doesn't matter how much superior genetically engineered intellect you have, if you're only thinking in these narrow parameters, it's useless, as we've seen.
Yeah, it is a tragedy.
It's a tragedy, and I think it's more tragic, and I think that point I was making is so much more clear with the context of the audio drama. And again, you know, more Khan Joachim stuff coming to a head here.
In this scene, it's sad because he had to see his father, kind of like, in a way, the battle is the boar, you know, so he's probably, I'm imagining now that he's getting flashbacks to Joaquin dying when his son, you know, he must, you know, in his, like, I wonder if he feels like he even let down Joaquin by letting Joaquin die, you know, and stuff like that. Yeah. It just fuels the rage even more for him.
And I also like knowing that Joaquin is the father of Joachim, and that Khan had this kid that, even though we never hear about them, it does kind of make their bond seem more intense. This son who lost a father and this father who lost a kid. And yeah, they kind of would be like a good fit. sad that they couldn't have had a healthier relationship in a better environment. And but that's what I'm saying. It's like the audio drama makes this movie much more sad to me. Just the things that could have been but weren't.
It's neat to. It's kind of neat to think like while this is going on, I guess. Kali and Mado are on that other planet, right? Like they're living their life. Like she's probably in school. She's probably 15 around or 16 around this time. You know, it's interesting.
Yeah. Her age is kind of hard to figure out because it's kind of disputable where in the timeline, like what year Wrathicon takes place. I think 2285 makes the most sense, even though that totally doesn't line up with Kirk saying that they've with Khan saying they've been there for 15 years. But maybe he figured out what, like, a solar year for SETI Alpha 5 is, and he was 15 of those. I think it would actually be 67 to 85. That would be 18 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
But going off of that, then yeah, she would be, like, 17... 18 maybe, but she also had like this advanced brain and is probably closer to, you know, like a
She probably skipped a few grades. Yeah. And
that's why she's a doctor so young in the audio drama.
The audio drama establishes how many years since, what does it say, how many years, how old is she?
The audio drama doesn't say her age, but
I thought they did. I thought they said she was 5 or 6.
Oh yeah, she's 5 when... of a... She's 5 when she leaves the planet. She's 5 when she leaves SETI Alpha 5. But yeah. It doesn't say how old she is in the present when she's hanging out with Sulu and Tuvok.
But I could have, you know, we might be able to go back and listen and do the math because I could have sworn they said something like, it's been so many years since, like, something. Like, they established something like, you know, I don't remember, but I'll have to go back and listen.
She mentions kind of like she's in the end of her university. Like, I think she's writing her doctorate.
She talked about her senior year when Mado died.
It was sophomore year when Mado died.
Her sophomore year when Mado died.
So I think she's in her senior year of whatever program she's in, and she's doing this as her dissertation.
But they already refer to her as doctor.
But you can be getting multiple doctorates too.
But why does she need multiple doctorates? Like, she's only going
to
be like 25.
Father, in the future, they probably have like on average 6 doctorates. Like, it's probably like, and then again, she's like smarter than everyone else. So it's like, you know, not everyone else, but like a lot of people.
Yeah, I think she's between 25 and 30.
I'm just doing the math here. The back half of season 1 of the original series is probably all in 2267. Wrathicon, you know, at least according to the dedication plaque that was on screen briefly in an episode of Star Trek Picard season 2, the Wrathicon takes place in 2285. So let's say she was born in 68. Because, you know, she needed like 9 months to cook or whatever. Well, they said augments actually just stayed a little faster, so maybe a little quicker than that. But let's just say she was born in 68. And generally it's considered that the events of Star Trek, the opening of like Star Trek Generations when Kirk dies, that's in 2293. So 68 to 93, she'd be 25. And around the events of the Wrath of Khan, it would be 8 years before that. So she'd be about 17 when Wrath of Khan happens, and then about 25 when she's a doctor on board the Excelsior with Tuvok and Sulu. So
wait, but isn't it what in the beginning of the Khan series, Sulu says Captain Kirk died when?
So, like 6 months ago. So it was shortly after 25. That.
Okay, that's cool. Good. We figured out her age.
Yeah.
And I think someone in the live audience was asking how old the kids are on the Reliant, maybe, and I think that they're like 30s. In their 30s at this point. Yeah
those genetically engineered genes are pretty good. Like even living on the terrible environment of SETI Alpha 5, they still aged pretty well.
They do like put SETI Alpha eel stuff on their faces to keep eel masks.
I think them being like in their 30s kind of makes more sense in the beginning when Joachim is like, can we please just go settle down somewhere? Like, I just want to be 30 and, like, have a chill life for a moment. Like, I haven't had a single day to just, like, rest and, like, be normal. Or, like, I don't know, maybe have a family or go do something or take a vacation. Like, geez.
When they do outmaneuver the Reliant and just light it up, and, you know, we get, like, those shots of Khan where his face is covered in blood, and Ricardo Montalban is so good in these, you know, final moments of Khan. Just it's like his internal ugliness has now come out on the surface, and he looks monstrous. He looks like a monster, but he basically decides to do the same thing that he decided to do at the end of Space Seed, and he's like, "Oh, I can't let Kirk beat me, so I'd rather just blow us all up." You know, that's what he tried to do in engineering and Space Seed, and that's what he tries to do on the Reliant when he activates the Genesis device. And starts, you know, quoting more Moby Dick.
I like what you said, that he actually thinks he won. Like, he actually thinks the last thing he sees is, like, the Enterprise kind of struggling and with no way to escape. And so he actually thinks he's winning here, which is crazy.
Yeah, the delusions of Khan, you know, like he misread the situation with Kali. He's like, "Oh no, I failed to save my daughter." But it's like, "No, you idiot, you succeeded." And then here he dies thinking, like, "It was all worth it. It was all worth it. The Botany Bay, SETI Alpha 5, the Reliant, I got to bring down Kirk. I'm gonna blow his ass up right now." And he dies thinking that is the impression I get. I guess it is possible. You do see, like, the Enterprise warp away, like, just like a split second before the Reliant explodes. But I don't, the way that it's edited, there's no way that I don't think he saw that. And if, you know, if that was going to be the intent, you would do what they did in the last episode of Star Trek Picard, where the Borg Queen got to see all of her stuff blowing up. Like, she knew it was the end of the Borg.
Yeah.
And which was, you know, very satisfying. I loved the way that they did that with the, you know, when the fat one finally took down the Borg once and for all, very satisfying. But yeah, I like that this is different. I like that Khan was so deluded, and even though he had the superior engineered brain, he still had his head so far up his ass that he couldn't see the, you know, the forest for the trees. He dies losing, but convinced that he won.
Mm-hmm. Except that, to his surprise, there's an afterlife and Kirk's not there.
That would be funny. Yeah, I need to see that. I need to see that scene of Khan standing in front of the great koala being like, "What do you mean he's still alive?" And he's going to end up in the Nexus and basically get to, like, live in heaven. So it's like, what? What? Terrible, terrible. But yeah, he got to go out with some dope ass lines, you know, quoting the Moby Dick, the "From hell's heart, I stab at thee, for hate's sake, I spit my last breath at thee." He's just very, I kind of like that, like, him being so bloody and ugly. It's like, oh yeah, like that, that type of a thoughtless spite and hatefulness is actually, you know, it's not a pretty thing.
Right.
Don't go down the Khan path. Don't be like that.
No. Be like Kirk. Don't be like, well, maybe be like Spock.
You know, Kirk and Khan both lose Joachim and Spock, like, right in front of them, and have that similar parallel also, where they have to say goodbye and watch them die.
Yeah, they do both. They both lose their first officer, and they both lose their second in command in this movie. But yeah, that is the tragic ending of Khan, Nooni, and Singh. As
I like that you went back to this picture. That's great.
how he originally appeared, or at least how he looked during the eugenics war in the 1990s or the 21st century, depending on what version of the timeline has been altered by what time traveling shenanigans.
For the audio audience, Father has a picture up. It looks like it's a promotional picture or a behind the scenes picture.
That's the picture,
like, that
they took for what was on the Enterprise computer screen in Space Seed when they're researching Khan, Nooni, and Singh.
Got it. Like, the picture that would be in his Wikipedia page.
Yeah. This basically, they pulled up the Wikipedia page on the Enterprise computers, and then Scotty was like, I always respected this dictator.
Great.
Anywho, that brings us to the end of our discussion on the Wrath of Khan, unless Taylor or Sale, either of you have any final thoughts you want to say?
I would just like to say it was fun kind of unpacking all of this with you guys, especially after the Khan miniseries. And it's been also a lot of fun listening to the Text Trek coverage of the Khan audio drama, as well as Space Seed. You guys crushed it, so I'm very honored to have been a part of this discussion and leave my little thoughts in there too.
Yeah, you have to come in for the big finale, so
yeah super cool.
But y'all heard us talk about the Wrath of Khan for an hour and a half, so y'all know what we think about it after listening to the Khan audio drama. Please let us know what you think. You can leave a comment on YouTube or Spotify, or talk to us in the Text Trek Discord server, links wherever you are watching or listening to me right now. Or you can also reply to my post on social medias. I like to ask people what they're thinking about some of these topics we discuss on the show. Last week, we were revisiting the TOS episode Space Seed that introduced Khan. And we received some subspace transmissions from last week. In the Text Trek Discord server, Chuck A just screams "Khan" in all caps, so yeah, very appropriate reaction. Taylor, will you read this response we got from Cassie Mack in the Text Trek Discord server?
They say, "Those stasis suits, OMG," with lots of emojis. "I was glad to learn that Marla was so much more badass than this episode showed us, but I guess that comment is more for the Wrath of Khan. Her powerful influence and strength of character hang like a shadow over Khan's every moment," with a little happy, sad face.
Mm-hmm.
They also say, "Rewatching Space Seed made me realize the true core of the issue with augments isn't their enhanced strength or intelligence. It's the fact that they've been told they're superior from the moment of birth. That's the direct cause of their heightened ambition, as seen when Khan's first move upon waking was to physically threaten Bones for no reason. Being raised in a lab and told they're superior, and then being used as tools of war, but then punished and oppressed for being dangerous, that's what created these broken people who couldn't function in our society. Being stronger and smarter didn't cause any of that, though it did contribute. The real problem is the people who thought it would be okay to create a slave race to dominate and never realizing those augments were implanted with the same need to dominate others. Lack of empathy is a self-perpetuating cycle of harm."
Yeah.
Very good.
So those are very good thoughts, very good observations. As Cake is Eternal also commented to Cassie Mack in the Text Trek Discord server. And then Cassie Mack went on to say, "It started with Ursula's comment that Khan didn't need to take the Enterprise. He was acting on instinct. He didn't know if the ship that found him was good or bad, competent or not, but that didn't matter to him. Khan was instilled with the belief that he could, of course, do it better, and without being taught empathy, his only instinct was to dominate." And that's very insightful. I like that it's not... Those observations that they don't really like victim blame, but they also don't really absolve Khan of his crimes. It's kind of an explanation of where that behavior might originate, and kind of why that's not a good thing to have in societies, is these you know, beliefs in being like the master race or the chosen ones or, you know, whatever. It's never gonna have a good ending.
It's very nurture versus nature. Mm-hmm. A little bit, like they were nurtured into this. Like,
that's exactly what I was gonna say. Imagine had they been taught that they're just like everyone else, you know, like, or that there's no, you know, there's different ways of looking at, you know, equality and stuff like that, and, you know, like stuff. That's interesting. It's a very cool comment.
Also, kind of weird that the augment experiments wouldn't have like a control, and then also the ones like out in the wild, like in a way, like
maybe they did. Oh,
here, have this, like, adopted kid who's secretly an augment, and we just, like, monitor them and see how they do, just thinking they're a normal kid. And then also have like augments like in the lab and raised that way under scrutiny, you know? I don't know. It's kind of weird that you wouldn't put them out there, I guess, and only have them in the lab situation.
But there's like something like, I forget where I remember, there were like 90 augments that were never found, apparently, or something like
well,
that.
Well, those so are the ones that were on the Botany Bay. Were the
yeah, oh, those are the... Oh, yeah, yeah. My bad. So.
Okay. But, yeah, I thought those were like some really good thoughts there. So, but if yes. anyone else out there has things they want to share on Wrath of Khan, please chime away. Just a reminder, folks, we're not going to do a show next week because Thanksgiving, we're taking the week off, but we will be back some point in December before the end of the year. So be sure that you're following us and we'll let you know what we're talking about when we get to it. We'll go ahead and sign off for this week. But until next time, as always, live long and prosper, y'all.
Subscribe to YouTube to watch the Text Trek podcast live or listen to us later on your favorite podcast platform. Follow Stephen Fothery on socials at TX Trek. Thank you and take care.